Minnesota basketball fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast. He's Aaron. I'm Chris. And we got a whole lot to talk about. And it's funny, just moments ago, we were talking off air and before we started recording. And once in a while, folks, especially in Facebook or Twitter, will give us some heat, give us some shit, basically, for the name Living in Loserville. But we haven't done the show in like 11 or 12 days, and we haven't between the Gophers or the Timberwolves, not one W to speak of. So it's amply named, basically, is the point here. We are back to talk about a whole lot of basketball information, items, whatever you want to call it. Most of it will be off the court, unfortunately. But it may be, fortunately. We'll see where this goes. But, of course, we're going to lead with the headline. Saunders, Ryan Saunders, son of Flip Saunders, RIP, is fired mid-season. Not the biggest shocker as far as Saunders not being the coach going into next year. What was surprising and something rare hasn't happened in, like, 10 or 11 years since Memphis did it, where a team in the NBA hires a coach straight up, not put someone on the bench and let him ride it out like Vanderpool or something like that, which is normally what that would be. He decided to go get a guy that he believed in. Now, there has been some controversy from that because it's like, well, did you go through the proper process? Should we have waited to the offseason, which is normally the protocol? Like I said, Lionel Hollins, and we know him in Minnesota because we had his son Dre at the Gophers. He got hired midseason in Memphis, ended up having a pretty good career there. But we could actually say something about how they, you know, had some injuries in the playoffs, and, you know, he kind of got screwed out of his job there. But anyway, we will talk about that. Some folks saying, well, you know, Ryan didn't get a fair shake. He didn't have cap this year. We're going to talk it all through, first of all, just the firing. And really, people do kind of forget he did coach the second half of the Tibbs year when we fired him. And, you know, so obviously that's part one. Why was it deserved? Did he get a fair shake and all that good stuff? Then the second layer is the process of just jumping right to a head coach rather than waiting to the offseason. And, you know, the finalists that were finalists three or 2 years ago seemed like those were the same finalists. One of them on our staff, of course, one of them who we joined, and then another guy, I just can't remember his name. But anyway, so we're going to talk about that. We'll also talk a little recap in a sense. I mean, we're not going to go over many games, that's for sure. Maybe that last Bulls game or something like that. But there has been just an issue boiling for quite some time about the late game scenarios, the last 2 minutes, last 5 minutes, the fourth quarter, just in general. Although we've seen some, you know, potential in defense and in minor improvement there, not enough still, but we've really found a way. 14 out of the last 15 or 15 out of the last 16, something like that, single digit games. And it's pretty crazy. There's issues going on. People want to blame this guy. They want to say that guy. You know, where's Ryan Saunders fall in some of that? Obviously, we're not going to say he should be fired because he is. But there's just a lot to talk about when it comes to that. And, you know, also addressing the controversy of, you know, hiring a coach. Black coaches out there. Did we not go through the proper protocol on this one? So there's a lot to discuss. So we're going to keep it Timberwolves heavy. Mostly, like I said, off the court. We will get into our Golden Gophers Club, which is just in free-for-all. I understand, you know, Robbins and Gabe were out, but we got enough depth. If you look at Johnson, if you look at some of the guys we have, Mashburn's been stepping up, Trey. We had enough to get it done last night and didn't get it done. Where does the Gopher squad stand with three games left? It's pretty crazy that they were 4-4, like a fifth seed in the bracketology, tied for like four teams with the most ranked wins. And here we are on another losing streak. So we're going to talk all about that in just a moment. If this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoperadio. You know, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and rope it up and listen to it in the browser there or download it directly. You can, but you don't have to. You can find this basketball show under the Rope-A-Dope Radio podcast at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, really almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found almost everywhere. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. Basketball, football, boxing, baseball, everything in between. And we did start a special Living in Loserville Spricker channel. So you can follow that. You can listen to some of the shows. Recently, the co-host Aaron here did a Viking show. That'll be something that is kind of a year-round Minnesota football basketball stuff. So look for that and follow that, Living in Loserville on Spricker. One more thing, then we're going to get to the good stuff. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, maybe you have, you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. You do have a seven-day free trial. There's no annual contracts. The plans start as low as $55 a month. You can stream it anywhere. Of course, they have the cloud DVR. And just for signing up, you get a seven-day free trial of HBO Max. If you upgrade to the Max package, that'll include HBO Max plus a free month of Showtime. That's AT&T TV Now live streaming cable. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host Aaron. How goes it, sir? It's really too bad that it's a slow week, you know, locally in news, and there's really not going to be much to talk about here on this program.
No, I mean, there's a lot to talk about on this program, just like you mentioned. And, you know, I went to bed the night they played the Knicks, they being the Timberwolves. I was interested to see how that game went down because Thibodeau's with the Knicks now, and I'm kind of a secret Knicks fan. And I wanted to see how it went down. It was a close game. Didn't think much of it. Finished watching it, got ready to go to bed and all that stuff, and then the news comes over the wire that somehow Ryan Saunders was fired. Now, they didn't mention anything about the replacement at the time, so I'm scouring around on the internet trying to figure out what the deal is. Finally comes in. Chris Finch is the new head coach, and I started to have some thoughts about, well, you know, that was weird. You know, like you said, it hadn't happened since Memphis in the 90s or something like that. So I wanted to kind of look into what happened there and possibly how long that had been on Gerson Rosas's mind.
Yeah, and it's 2009, Lionel Hollins is the last time. I want to say like 2003, too. It had only happened twice in the last 21 years. So it is very rare. And obviously, a good chunk of the media picked up on, well, hey, now wait a second. And obviously there is an issue in the NBA, not just with black coaches, by the way, or even black assistant coaches, but with GM positions, assistant GM positions. So there is a lot to talk about when it comes to that. So that's part of this story as well that we cannot ignore. But I do think there can be separate discussions or debates on the same topic, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they screwed up in that way, per se. But it's worth talking about in general. But let's start with the guy who got fired, Ryan Saunders. Some people think because there was no cap this year, or not enough anyway, that he got kind of not a fair shake. I think people do forget, like I mentioned about Tibbs, you know, the Tibbs year when we fired him, you know, Saunders took over from there. And it's funny when you look at the record now, whole different team, of course, different scheme because he didn't change it right away. They were 17-26 in that, man, with 17 wins sound, 14 wins right about now, it sound damn good. Like, that's a good team right there. 17-26. Yeah. Sign me up. But so my point is that's a half a year. And then you had from, you know, late October or whatever, early November, when the season normally starts, of course, this was before COVID, all the way till about what, second week in March when the whole thing shut down. So that's about a month left in your season. So now you're really close to a year and a half. Not a full year of coaching last year. We get it. But it was about half this year in this 10 less game season. So that's about 2 years. He had already been on the bench, I believe, before that. Well, yeah, he was, because he took over. So my point is, Rosas and everyone there, I guess, that's still there, did get a look at him. So the whole fair shake thing, I don't know. What do you think about it? Because, of course, you know, we didn't want to overly judge him. We actually put it off for a couple weeks, much like we did with the Edwards. When is he going to get in the starting lineup? Well, let's see. And a couple of these things kept happening. So we were going to wait on Saunders to let Cat come back, and then we could get a full look at him. But what are your thoughts? Because, you know, on the fair shake thing, or if you thought he should get fired or not, because, you know, last year we went on some of the longest losing streaks we had ever as a franchise, and that was with Cat in the lineup.
Yeah, there it is. I mean, I think you just kind of laid it out. Long losing stretches of both last season and this season. Now, the other side of that coin, as far as whether it was fair or not, I think is he never really got a full season. You know, he got the equivalent of a full season, but like you said, he took over in one season, got a shortened other season, and started this season. And even this season was a little bit weird. So that on that side of the coin, I would say probably not the fair shake, but you know, you had time to insert your principles, to show improvement, to get this team going in the right direction. And I'm not saying that all of it was bad that Saunders had did. He had made a lot of improvements, I think, him and Rosas with personnel and so forth, and maybe a little bit of style of play, but we still were not very good defensively, although we were improving right before he was fired. And we still had problems, you know, towards the end of games. That has always kind of been the issue since Saunders has been around. And, you know, you're right, that 17-25 Thibodeau record that we were all complaining about at the time sure would be nice right now. And, you know, but that's a whole nother can of worms. So, I did want to see Saunders replaced at some point. I thought mid-season, never saw that coming. Total surprise. Probably expected it to be at the end of the season. You know, we talked off air a little bit, Chris, and I'm sure he's a great coach, but he seemed a little green for the NBA. But, you know, the players loved him. He was a player coach. But it seemed like maybe the proof of the pudding was the late game performance.
Yes, you nailed it, because and I understand the stringid, which I like, Thibodeau. Thibodeau wasn't perfect, but anytime you can get a club, you can bring in a butler, right? You can get two guys. We always talk about people don't want to be here. We got two guys to sign a max that we drafted. Well, we didn't draft Wiggins, but we got him before, you know, his rookie year. And then we got Butler here. And had we given him the full deal, like we said, we could have had all those three guys under contract. Now, of course, we could talk about the trade and Zach for, you know, Wiggins and all that, but I'm saying he did accomplish some things in a short amount of time. So he's not perfect, but anytime you get a top 10 efficiency in offense and defense, that's a pretty good thing to build around. But the Jimmy Butler thing, like you said, just that whole team that's gone, whatever. It is the late game stuff, and I'm glad you brought up the player coach stuff, because he did seem like too much a buddy. And the reason why I brought up Tibbs, I'm just remembering, is, you know, to go from a Tibbs, right, to a brand new system next year and going to be new parts too. He did have to have maybe a player coach. Hey, dude, I've known you since you're a rookie. You know, like, I'm there with you, buddy. And so I think that was a smart move. Also, both of us thought, like many in the city here thought, you know, well, Ryan Saunders more than likely was just, hey, there's going to be a lot of change. Taylor probably was like that. You know, you give me the finalist list, I'll pick Taylor. Or not Taylor, but I'll pick Saunders, because I really think that it was just going to be a good hiring for now, because people like him and his dad had passed. And so it was like, why not? And hey, if you get lucky and he turns out to be a damn good coach, well, then you got him and you'll probably be able to extend him for a long ass time, because he probably want to stay here. But yeah, I think you hit it on the nose. The late game stuff, no matter who you got. Well, not no matter who you got, but pretty much, you know, in some of these games. And also just, you know, the player coach thing, like even in the press conferences, sometimes it was just like, what, you know, what's going on? You can say something bad, dude. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And he seemed very reluctant. There was a tweet by Dan Moore the other day, though, and he brought up the Hornets and Timberwolves for a variety of reasons, not just LaMelo and Ant. He actually didn't even talk about that. But he said the Hornets, when leading, and they're not this veteran-laced team either. They're still trying to come up and be a winning team. Hornets, when leading after three quarters this year, 12-0, league's best. Now, obviously, you're not just going to get 12-0. But in those, I mean, talking about leading into the third quarter, and some of them have been double digits, even to 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and we're 5-8, league worst in those games. And offensively, defensively, we're just not getting the job done. A lot of it late, though, has been offense. So I'm not shocked it's done, or he was done, like you said. The mid-season stuff, that does throw me off. However, though, I agree with him getting fired at some point this year anyway. Or let go, to say it nicely in a Minnesota nice way, let him go, you know. But in the same breath, you know, you and I, on air and off air, have been really looking at, okay, we got Cat back. Now it's like 9 games or something, or 8, you know, 1-8 in those games. But now we really get to judge the roster, how we want to do it, who's going to be in the starting lineup, who's going to be the backups, what's the rotation, and let's start running this thing more and more through Towns. And the lack of minutes for the starters, the 14 different rotations, and only, I think, 7 of those have started more than back-to-back games, like the amount of minutes or more minutes they needed to play, and not just that, but the million rotations. It's one thing to try some stuff, but I did think he went a little overboard in, hey, dude, just accept Okogie's not a 4, dude, and move on. I think some of that played into it. But, yeah, like it kind of goes back to the close game stuff. You can't be in that many close games and falter that many times.
And all those points are dead on the money. And, you know, here we are, Chris. I mean, at this point, this is it. This is where you can judge your franchise now. This is a talented roster. I don't care who you're telling me. Yes, it's young, but it's packed with young talent. And I guess you could go ahead and say veteran talent now, because Cat probably is considered a veteran. You've got, sure, Rubio, a veteran. You've got veterans on this team, but you've got probably the most talented young group besides maybe the Wiggins, Levine, who else was Cat was probably in that mix too. But I mean, I don't want to hear anymore about the talent. So now you've got your coach in place, Gerson Rosas. You've got, yeah, what you need. I don't want any more coaching changes, because now you got this young talent with Edwards and McDaniels, and they can't keep flipping coaches every year. So you better be happy with Finch now, because that's who you're going to roll with for at least 2 to 3 seasons if you know what you're doing. Otherwise, then the franchise is a complete mess, and I don't want to hear anything more about it. If you mess up this roster, this young roster, obviously you're going to make some trades in the backcourt. You have to. I'm still waiting for that a little bit, see how that shakes out. But other than that, I mean, with this roster, particularly Edwards, don't mess him up. And if you go switching coaches 3 more in 3 years, that's not going to help him. It's time for stability. Here's where we can judge the franchise going forward. You got a decent roster, a new coach. Let's go.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And I think some of this is him seeing potentially new ownership coming through. Is he going to be part of that? Well, if these last 40 games go good, or whatever, 38 games, it'll be better for him. You know what I mean? Obviously better for us watching. But I think he thought of looking at this break here that we got, 8-day break, where you can get like a mini camp too, where they're like, okay, you know, I think there's something here we can accomplish. But you're right, and I think that's why he's like, I'm gonna go out on my shield with my guy, and I think that played into it, no doubt. But you're right, I mean, they have enough talent to start getting everything down, the rotations, the everything, and this does it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This definitely puts that in a realm where you have to, it's all on you now. And that's kind of what I like about it. It's like, all right, dude, I've liked some of the roster stuff. You've done a lot of it, actually. I like, you know, the situation we were in and the situation in 2 years that we're going to be in. Cap-wise is a lot better. Like, we have some freedom. We have some stuff that, you know, I don't know about the trades this year. I think there'll be trades because he seems like, hey, I'll you know, like Spielman with seven rounders. He likes the trade. But maybe he's going to get a couple seven rounders from Spielman and they can mix that around and he'll give them a first or who knows. We could get a first. We could get the third pick this year and give it to them. No, I don't think that works. But, you know, I think you're right. This is it. All right. You got it. Now you got some time to do it. It's obviously you're only going to get so much accomplished offensively because this dude is an offensive guy to accomplish that. But just kind of looking into the scenario, 2 years ago, the first option to be the associate head coach was Finch. The second one was Vanderpool, and we signed him. Now, he is very – both these guys are good with development. On they get a lot of good praise, not just from coaches, but the actual players. And Karl-Anthony Towns made it known that he's a damn good coach. And even last year, he got Vanderpool three different interviews just last year. I think five total now. And I think right around that, maybe only four from the guy we got, Finch. He was in Portland for quite some time, the whole time, I think 2012 to 2019, Vanderpool, I'm talking about. And he was known, well, I shouldn't say known, but defensively, he was their defensive coordinator. We hired him to give him more responsibility. It's not just a promotional pay, but it does give him more responsibility. And he was our defensive coordinator. On the flip side, Finch has been more the offensive coordinator, and he was an associate coach with three different teams. So there, you know, it's he probably has more experience, but not a crazy amount because neither of them have been a head coach on the NBA team. So that's really when push comes to shove. Defensively, you know, which one should we have gone? You know, I would have been okay if they just went Vanderpool for the rest of the year and then figured it out. Would there have been a veteran team that just wants to mix up their offense? They're a playoff team. They can't get over the hump. Would they maybe be a little bit more like, would Finch be attracted to that job more than a rebuild? Maybe we would have lost them. Maybe we did just would have gotten Vanderpool, you know, in front of that. Maybe we would have lost him. I don't know. What I do know is he did try to contact some folks, NBA clubs, and obviously they're not going to really let too many people go right now, especially if you're like a playoff team. And it was a special scenario, but he did go over what he already had here. So basically similar finalists. So as far as the whole – I think it can be the same subject, but a different subject. The point is, we do need, you know, let's not forget that, you know, that the whole media spur the last couple of days was about, well, did Vanderpool get a fair shake? And that's going to be something we don't know the answer to, even whichever one we picked, we don't really know until we see both of them get a head coaching job in their circumstances, too. So, what are your thoughts, though? Because a lot of the media did kind of focus on, you know, the fact that did we go through the right channels? Yeah, it's a COVID year. Yeah, it's a weird, strange thing that hasn't happened in 2009. But I think it can be if you look at our front office and how it's built and our assistant coaches, I wouldn't really call this an old white man buddy club per se with Rosas anyway, not excluding Taylor, of course.
There it is, Taylor. I think they're asking, did we go through the right channels? Because we didn't, as far as minority coaches are concerned. You can window dress it all you want, but we didn't. And, you know, I don't know. In order to tell how this really shakes out, you're going to have to know what Vanderpool was brought in, you know, how he was brought into the mix. Was he saying, okay, well, you're in line for head coach this, or, you know, we'll set you in here, see how you do. Sooner or later, there'll be a shakeup. Depends on what pretense he was brought in under. That probably changes a lot. He was just brought in saying, okay, well, there's your job. Do your job. This is a defensive position. Be a defensive assistant coach. And there were no promises made beyond that. Then I think it was rather fair. Plus, I think this is an old school buddy thing with Gerson Rosas and Chris Finch. They might not admit to it, but I think they've been tied together for a while. And I don't necessarily think that's a terrible thing. Obviously, you want to work with who you're most comfortable. But at the same time, if you want to go down the road of minority coaches and so on and so forth, you know, you always have the question because it's not happening the way it should happen as far as the process is going. People are skirting around it and doing things like that, which, you know, in a game theoretic sort of thing, I suppose, that's, you know, par for the course. But, you know, it all depends on what he thinks at the end of the season, Vanderpool, that is. I mean, if he hightails it out of here, I think we'll have a pretty good idea of how he's feeling about everything. Other than that, he's kind of kept his mouth shut. I haven't seen much come directly from him about it. And that's what I'd be more interested in. I don't know if you have, but I certainly haven't. And
to, no.
You know, I just feel like, you know, obviously, like you said, you know, if Gerson's going to go down, he's going to go down with his parts and his buddies and so on. So, yeah, that makes more sense to me than anything else as far as what might be behind this change. You know, if anybody got a raw deal, it's probably Saunders, but like we went over that earlier. And I just, you know, at this point, Chris, it's, I just want to look to the future now. And, you know, I don't want to hear rebuild. You've got the roster. You've got talent here. And, you know, Timberwolves fans, unfortunately, we just want to win some games. We're not, yes, of course, someday we want a championship. We want the playoffs, but for, we don't want to go 17-5 or 5-17. You know, give us fucking 12-17. We'll be all right. Just win some games.
Yeah. That's been the most frustrating thing. You can tell, and maybe Rosas was thinking the same thing, that how many times can we be put in the same scenario and have the same fucking thing turn out in these games? And it does drag into last year, no doubt about it. And even, what did we win the first two? The only two games, even recent, that we could put together is we won one, lost two, and won one. You know what I mean? And they're all super tight games, and we felt pretty good. Like, okay. And then we've only won one game since that time. As far as, you're right. I mean, when you look at it, and I'm trying to say Rosas and Taylor are obviously together, but also separate in some sense, because we do have an assistant general manager who is African-American. We have three assistant head coaches that are. So I don't really look at Rosas as like, man, he's just doing this because of that. But you still, I'm glad the media, I'm glad that at every corner now and every turn that this stuff is getting brought up right away. It's not, well, let's see. I don't know. Well, you know, no, let's talk about this. Was this the proper way? And even the coaches union came out and said, you should have waited. Or just got, you know, the COVID thing. Well, if it's COVID thing, then just wait, you know, if you can't, you know, get more people. Now I know technically you went over your old list, which two of them were still here or whatever, I suppose three with Saunders, but, you know, as far as just breaking the two coaches down, like I said, we really don't know who's going to be better. And it, sometimes it's a scenario where you go. Sometimes you have a veteran team that just needs a little push or a different voice. You come in there and it rolls really nicely. It's all over the place, you know. But I'm not going to now think Rosas is this ignorant dude that didn't want to hire a black coach per se either. You know, I'm in between. I don't, you know, the process should have happened. If COVID's an excuse, then just wait a couple months.
Just to break in quickly, a law not enforced is not a law. You know what I mean? If you're not going to put penalties on this process, then it doesn't give anybody any incentive to follow it. So I'm not really that upset about it. Now, if you say you don't go through the process, you lose a second round pick, or, you know, your salary cap gets, you know, gets clipped a little bit, something. Right. But until you put any real negative consequences to the other side of it, then it's just basically symbolic show of I don't know, empathy.
Sure. Yeah. Now, as far as separating that and just look at the two coaches' experience, you know, I would favor Finch in the experience just because he's had three separate associated head coaches. And we know that he has Vanderpool has a lot of people from Portland that love him. And when he's come here, being the defensive coordinator, you can't sit there and say our defense has improved a lot, but then again, you know, it's been a weird system. You know, it's been a variety of change that we can't just put all on him. But we did see some recent, some of that is Vanderbilt and, you know, McDaniels in the lineup. And maybe he was big on saying that, too. We don't know. You know, hey, let's get one of these guys in here. You want defense? Well, we got to get a defender in there who that's his main job. One thing I'll say about Portland, I don't know who was their associated head coach those 7 years or 8 years he was there. I know that they never gave it to him, though, and I also know that Portland has been up and down where they look like a lot of potential, then they get bounced out of the playoffs. So they could have hired him, too. So you wonder if they're looking back going, man, we left them, you know, we should have, because Minnesota fans can do that plenty, especially Vikings fan. We've had, what, three guys go win Super Bowls after they left here? So, you know, there's some times where you go, huh. But the fit, just like 2 years ago, the fit does seem like a fit because of Jokic and the stuff he did with that offense. The fact that he just had more experience as an associate head coach with a lot of success to stay the Anthony Davis, Boogie Cousins, the Harden, he helped change his game around and change their offense in general. So, but a lot of it is that not nepotism, but buddyism, like you said earlier about, hey man, I've gone through war with this guy, so I trust him. I know he's good to go. But both of them have gotten their chances in interviews the last, say, 6 years, but none of them did land it. Like I said, Vanderpool three times last year, or three different people. So he's knocking at the door. Both guys have been knocking at the door, and it just, you know, Finch got it. We'll see, like you said, after maybe someone gives them an offer. Literally, though, three teams. So that had been fourth, really, now. Although this wasn't really a process, if we're being honest. I don't know how much further, you know, do you have any last words on this or anything as far as the coaching stuff? I mean, it is what it is. And like you said, the moving forward thing, I do like the all-star break so they can at least do something with the system.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you're hoping for. You're hoping for he can install whatever he can install in 8 days or so, and they can move in their direction that they want to go. You know, there was the subject of the backcourt, and we'll save that to when things really start to move on it. But that does, you know, there's a change in coaches have an influence on which players you keep of those five or six backcourt players that we have and what we get in return. And as far as Vanderpool goes, I mean, if he's bounced and been, the next guy up three or four times, that could point to something like a human hot potato that, yeah, this guy's ready to be head coach, but who's going to make the move, you know, and making the move is really the important thing. And if no one's doing that, then maybe that's something to look at. And maybe that's why they put that procedure in. But, you know, like I said, if you don't put any weight behind it, it's really meaningless.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. There has to be some weight. And it doesn't mean like there's, you know, the Toronto GM or president, he's a black dude. He hired a white coach. It doesn't mean, it just means it needs to be run of the mill. This is how it needs to be. But how are you going to get it there if, like you said, there's no penalty? It doesn't mean the next eight coaches have to be black. That's not what some people want to go there on Twitter. It's like that has nothing to do with what the hell this is even we're even talking about. But look at the majority of the damn players. They're the ones making it work. You got a good coach, that's great, but the player has to do it. Now, there's different coaches that make the player it easier for them to do it or whatever. You can really glue with the team, and that's where you're a great coach. But there has to be some teeth with it. I mean, there has to be. But Cat is back. He's been playing really well on both sides of the ball. And it seems like a couple years ago we used to run the ball through him so much. And that's the biggest thing about Saunders that people were talking about too. A lot of people, you know, have been down on Rubio this year, and I get it for the first chunk of the season, no doubt. He even admits it. He was not playing good. He didn't come in top shape. Now he's in great shape. Now he's, you know, but it's not just the player. I mean, he didn't hit a three for like a month. I get it. But it's not just the player because, you know, we knew that D'Lo and Cat would have a – or not Cat, but Rubio would have a problem without Cat, and the whole offensive system really doesn't, you know, gel that well. But a couple games ago, I want to say it's that Toronto game, they kept featuring Rubio over and over and over and over again. And basically J-Mac had just been doing the exact thing they were trying to do with Rubio, but he was able to penetrate – super deep and dish or go high off the glass and make a couple layups. So he was part of the run that made it an even game because they were down in one of those. That's another thing. Like lately it's either one or the other, Aaron. It's either we get a lead and then we don't hold it, or we're down by 17. We make a run back and then we still lose. It's just so frustrating. But not to blame anything on Ryan now he's out the door, but to be honest with you, you can get mad at Rubio, sure, but the coach can call a timeout, you know? The coach cannot do that exact set over and over, literally like 7 out of 9 times they did it. And Rubio, you know, dribbled himself out of bounds where he had to take a timeout. He dribbled off his foot. He fell on the ground, turnover. But that's not his game, so why in the world, like, why use kid gloves with Ryan? And I think that's what we were doing as Minnesotans, rather than just blaming it on D'Lo a couple weeks back at the end of games, or Rubio here. But J-Mac, in my mind, does have to get more run, especially if it's one of those games, Aaron, that this unit's working well. So let's keep, you know, let's say McDaniels and J-Rock in there and bring back some of the starters. I do agree with that, and I think that may have been missing in the last month or so.
Sure. And with D'Angelo out for an extended amount of time, that changes the whole kind of look of what you want to do in the backcourt. I like J-Mac a lot, and I like Rubio a lot. I've never seen Cat play better, by the way. I'm really impressed with how he's been lately. It seems like he's really turned a corner as far as focus and determination, and that's really all I ever wanted to see out of him. I hope that continues. Now, Rubio, obviously you don't want to feature a guy like that. I'm a huge Rubio fan. I think most of people that listen to the show are aware of that. I just like the way he plays the game. And I can't see where, having said that, I can't see where you would still highlight him. He's not as young as he once was. I think he's more of, like we've been saying, a calming force, a smart player, someone to help young people progress and also, you know, fill in needs here. But he's not going to shoot the lights out some night. And he's not going to obviously get to the hoop as much as you'd like or as well as you'd like. But he does a lot of other things that really make him worth a team. Now, off the air, you and I kind of said, you know, on a great team, Rubio's a backup point guard. And obviously, we're not a great team. But I think that's still the role you're looking to keep him in and or to get him into. And, you know, J-Mac is also a backup point guard. So we kind of have that thing. Is D'Angelo a starting point guard? Is he more of a two? We've got some things going on in that backcourt. And I'd like to see how that plays out before I make a lot of great decisions. And what Finch wants to do is also very important there. And but Rubio's been playing better, obviously. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he came in sort of out of shape, but you know, he seems to be getting into shape now, and Rubio's always good in transition. That's where he kind of shines. So I'd like to, you know, let him be more of a role player. J-Mac is a little better in the half court, but then, you know, Chris, what are we going to do when D'Angelo comes back and we've got Edwards and Culver and all these guys? Now Culver's coming back now, and I'd like to see that
out for a while too. Jesus.
I'd like to see how that plays out sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of speculation about D'Lo and all that, but, you know, now we know he's, I mean, when he came back that one time, even though he maybe played good in one of those games, you could see, I thought he was just stiff, like a little like hesitant, but it didn't look like he was badly hurt by any stretch, but he just didn't look quite right. And now we know, you know, like I said, 4 to 6 weeks, that comes. They actually just released the second part of the schedule. It goes until like May 16th. So we could get anywhere from a month to 5 or 6 weeks with him in the lineup. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what you want out of your playmakers, but especially if Edwards is going to start to take over as at least a part-time with the ball playmaker, not just, you know, bringing up the ball is one thing, but running the whole thing through him or through him and Kat. What pieces do you want around Edwards, and where does D'Lo, Rubio, and all that fit in? That will be interesting.
Also, you know, does Edwards, you know, make D'Angelo expendable? Are they kind of the same player? You know, obviously not in how they play the game, but the same position wise. You're obviously, hopefully, you don't have any intentions of moving Edwards, and I think you'd rather keep Edwards than D'Angelo Russell. Does that mean that possibly you could move D'Angelo Russell in a way to alleviate some of that weight you got there in the backcourt?
Well, I wouldn't want Edwards to have the ball all the time, though. But I think it's important to have another playmaker with him, because you don't want to have him feature all the time. Plus, you got to get the ball to Kat, too. But also, the important thing with Edwards is having shooters around him. You got to have some shooters around him. And so I think D'Lo, what was the average? Five assists. I think in the past he's done six or seven when he's played full starter minutes. That's another thing with Saunders. Nobody was playing full starter minutes, whoever was starting. And Rubio mentioned this, and D'Lo, about the mid-range and how him and Flip would have – both of those guys would have conversations, and it just – like on the sidelines where you're like, I think that's about the last mid-range they just took. And sometimes that whole – well, it's either got to be at the rack or it's got to be a three. Well, you got to, you know, you traded for these guys, so you got to be able to fit them in there at what they can do too. But no, I think, I don't know how it blends because I haven't seen it, but you want a shooter around Edwards. I think it'd be, I'm not a big fan of, and that's why if we start Rubio, I feel like you have to have Beasley because you want a shooter. Because one thing I liked about Fitch did say.
Another name. I'm sorry, Beasley's another name I forgot. Another name in the backcourt, you know.
Yeah, and he's on fire too, shooting at 40% from three. He's a damn good player. But what was I just about to say? The Fitch. He just said, and I've wanted to hear this from Ryan the whole time. This is what I want out of Edwards. Two out of three times, two of them should be going to the rack. One should be a jumper. And it's like, yep, that's about right. So every third drive, take a jumper. But we want you attacking because we've seen on tape now that you can play make. And so that's why I mean if you're going to have him driving, which is the best thing he does, you need a shoot, not just one shooter, but you need shooters around so he can dish to them and it opens up the floor for him. So, you know, I'm not so – he's a tweener, but there's a lot of tweeners in the NBA. So I'm not really – I think D'Lo will fit nicely. I think Rubio – I still think Rubio and D'Lo could fit potentially with Edwards on the floor. We'll see when it comes there. Real quick, though, just to while we – end. Actually, let me – do you want to finish up, follow up on any of that?
No, I liked all of it. I would just say that, you know, I do agree with the Rubio and the Russell pairing. I do believe with Edwards, with anybody. But then, you know, Beasley's out for 14 games due to his suspension, but – yeah, that's another player you're going to want on the court, whether it's, you know, six man or, I mean, to me, that's his ideal thing. I know you probably think he's a starter, and the way he's playing, it's hard to
say. No,
it's hard
we
to
talked call about this. I'm good either way. I think he's proven he could do either way.
But I mean,
he's really good at it in Denver when he got the playing time.
So, I mean, you've got quality players in that backcourt and a lot of them. So obviously there's going to be some trade pieces there, you would think. It's just the choices are tough, Chris. I mean, Rubio or J-Mac, that's probably a comparison. Do you want Edwards or D'Lo or Beasley? I mean, there's a Culver. Is he a three now? Where do we go with this? You know, and that's – I want to see that get worked out, and unfortunately that probably won't be till the offseason. But, you know, I'd like to see – and then what can you get back is another thing. And you got to probably settle with five instead of what? What do you got, eight now probably backcourt players?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of that will get straightened out. We may even straighten it out coming up here in a month for the trade deadline. I'm not as worried about that now just because of the scenario, not just the coaching trade, but even before that where, you know, we're missing this, we're missing that. But I trust him when it comes to trades. And I do want to remind people this about Rosas. Last year, we took – Robert Covington, and we got Malik Beasley, Vanderbilt, and Hernan Gomez right? In a first round that became Ricky Rubio and Jaden McDaniels. Now, we also had to get rid of Johnson, who was an expiring guy. And we do have that Leonardo dude who is on the shelf as a point guard who knows when he's coming over or if we trade him or whatever. But that's – I mean, when I look at that list, McDaniels and Vanderbilt and Beasley and Rubio, really it started with Covington and Johnson. Like, I look at that, and I think we can't lose sight of what is capable. But I'm not expecting – a big move at the end of this one. But by next trade deadline, for sure, I think something will come. And I think, like you said, the 6 and 8 and all those numbers, I really think they're just going to joint up a couple of them and trade them for that guy. Joint up the couple other, maybe a big will be in there, and try to get one guy that maybe is getting overpaid in a scenario at a different team, but it works out for us because it's the same salary. It's just we get what this guy can do and this guy can do in one sitting. Gopher wise, we're not going to get too deep into this one. Obviously, you know, the Gopher Illinois game, Mashburn and Trey got into the lineup. We do have some injuries there. We're not going to say we don't. Johnson and Robbins earlier, you could tell Robbins was a little banged up because he didn't have rebounds for quite a while. But it was only 30-26, Aaron, at the 6:22 mark, and then at half it was 48-33, and that was about it. Once Carr picked up his fourth foul somewhat early, it got pretty disgusting. Robbins did get 5 blocks, I'll give him that. But this last one last night, no Liam, no Gabe, but you know. Still, we have enough talent. Johnson's still a solid player. We have a veteran big. The game was 44-44 under 9 minutes. It was 49-48 with like 4-something minutes to go. Carr was starting to dish and drive and dish and score. We were playing good enough, and it seemed like the back-to-back threes, it's 58-51, that was it. And we had missed 16 straight threes until Carr hit it, which made it 49-48 at the time. But there's just no excuse for a home loss. And here we are, on another losing streak.
There it is. I mean, that's the thing, that the kicker there is the home loss. Maybe you go to Northwestern and lose – I mean, somewhat more acceptable than losing at home. And the shooting hasn't been great, but usually it's better at home, and it just wasn't last night. And to go back to that Illinois game, I mean, that, first of all, Illinois is a damn good basketball team. They're tough, and they're fast, and they're competitive. And it just showed how much that maybe we're lacking in some of those departments. They kind of kept it close a little bit in the beginning, but I mean, that Illinois squad is impressive, and they're ranked 5. And I think in the tournament, they're going to, do some great things. But, these last 3 games, Chris, I mean, we kind of talked a little bit off air. We should have probably won all 4 of the last 4, or maybe a little trouble at Rutgers. But you put yourself in a really tough spot with that loss last night. And you got to beat Nebraska. I mean, that's a must win. And so is Penn State. And, you don't make the tournament this year after the way it started. There's no question about a hot seat for Patino, and I mean an actual, not a Facebook group one. I'm talking about, actual having to take a look at it after 8 years. And, I like Patino. I'm going to probably back him. He's had some hard knocks, but at the same time, 8 seasons, a couple tournaments, had a great team, but didn't get there, or actually lost in a tournament where he could have done well. I'm not the guy to ask, because I kind of feel like, I like Patino. I don't want to see him go anywhere. But then again, it's been kind of a weird season, and it's kind of like all the other seasons where you can't really say it's been consistent, can you?
No. I think it would have helped, the year that they had the 5th seed, and then Nate got hurt in that – I can't remember that – one-year guy who came out of where he came from. What the hell was this kid's name? But anyway, when both those guys got hurt, we played a pretty good squad, lost that first game. But The next year, we brought back basically the team. And I can't blame – that was a Sweet 16 team. That's not a home thing. I mean, go back and look at it. You know, it really was. But, you know, when three of your starters are out and then another one suspended, and, you know, like, I can't blame Patino for that year. So he had, like, a good run, and then he kind of rebuilt. Then we made it to the second round. We've only made it to the second round legally, you know, twice in like the last 30 years legally, because Tubby made it 1 year too. This year would be a disappointment, though. I mean, after that Ohio State win, we're 4-4. Like I said, we're basically bracketology fifth or sixth. I mean, we're in good shape. And now we started with eight straight, you know, victories, or not victories, sorry, but eight straight, you know, games against ranked teams, never been done in the Big Ten before. Well, what the hell happened? You know what I mean? Like, hold on. Now your last 12 games are not, you know, we only play a couple of ranked teams. So it would be disappointing. We are going to put the brakes on. Let's decide to fire them now, because if they win the next three games, get to the tournament, you know, what are we really talking about? So we are going to wait and see how these last three games go. But like you said, man, that loss to Northwestern now puts the pressure where we got to win all, you know, we could have been three out of these four at least. And now we got to win all three of them. And it's crazy to even think that, Aaron, because we got two ats at Nebraska and at Penn State, not killers, but still, you know, 0-8 on the road. It's kind of like, man, talk about, you know, there would actually be some confidence if we were able to do that, but I'm just not confident we can go back-to-back wins on the road.
I'm right there with you. Nebraska seems like you're going to get that one. Penn State's the one, you know, we kind of talked the last show about what games we thought we would win coming down the stretch here. And I said, well, we'll get our first road win at Penn State. And, you know, I'm not so sure of it now, but like you said, you can't go to the committee with zero road wins. And look, you got a couple injuries, right? You got Gabe, you got Liam. They're both down. Liam's a little bit more, I think, of impactful miss than anything else, just because you don't have a lot else in the middle. Curry can play some minutes, and Johnson can play a little bit, and Freeman can play a little bit, but you don't really have a force. Liam had gotten into some foul trouble before that, and kind of been missing in some of those games as well. Sure. So we know how important he is there. And if you can't get him back for Rutgers, I don't know when the timetable is. I didn't see anything from Patino yet, but I'm sure he'll say something about it. So then again, can you tag these recent losses or the way they're finishing this season on him due to the injuries? Now, it's been that way sort of every one of his seasons. Well, I won't say every one. He's had a few exceptions, but a lot of his seasons have been injury riddled at the wrong time. And it's really not his fault, but it's something that reoccurs. And here we go again coming down the stretch where you and I thought we would really make hay coming down the stretch here. And it's not too late. You win the last three. It's going to change everybody's attitude a lot. But I think it's a really tall ask with those injuries.
It is a tall ask. In Maryland and Indiana, just winning one of those games with both of them were somewhat winnable without the injuries. You know, you're right, though, the next couple, you know, at least the next two aren't against top-level teams, so it kind of goes back to that Northwestern game. If you're in it and there's 5 minutes left, you got to close out the game then. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put the injuries on something that slowed us down this year. But, yeah, of late, sure, I think you can definitely point to that. But even last night, man, that was a very winnable game. We're going to get out of here. Any last words there, sir?
I know. Follow us on Spricker.com, like you mentioned earlier, and follow us on Instagram as well. I'll be doing another pre-draft show probably sometime in a couple weeks, basically motivated by seeing all these mock drafts, and none of them make sense to me. So I'm going to try to do a mock draft that makes sense coming up here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, and when we look at it, you know, we will, because the Timberwolves season is going to go much longer than normally. Well, not much longer, like a month longer. So we will, you know, we'll probably do another show because March 6th is when they're done, the Gophers, as far as their regular season. So we'll have a feel of what they accomplished in that time frame. But we will probably, we'll see where they go, but we will take a week off and go to, you know, the Purple People Eaters too before this free agency stuff. So look for that as well. It's going to be kind of funky this year with, like I said, the Timberwolves, because they literally go till March or May 16th, which is really good for this, all this new lineup and coach and blah, blah, blah with Cat back. But, you know, if the Gophers don't make the tournament and they're NIT bound, you know, we're going to talk about it, obviously, but we will do that. And then, of course, like the draft stuff. So we will look out for Vikings content in general. All right, we'll be back soon enough. Let's hope we can come back and talk about a win or two somewhere in this basketball landscape of Minnesota. Anyway, we're out. Peace.